you woo her. Do what the Bible tells you to. Do unto her, and she'll do unto you. Respect. Be prepared to serve and protect. You may be a boy and be as boys will be. I think that you've seen everything there is to see. But if you want to get a little taste of sugar,
hello, welcome to the Literature Lessons Podcast, and today we're interviewing Ellen Foley, who is an actress and singer, and amongst other things, she's also, what a lot of people don't know, a Broadway actress as well, and has done a lot of theater, and has done films and television. Hello, Ellen, welcome to the Literature Lessons Podcast.
Thank you very much, Keith and Vicky. Lovely to be here.
Thank you.
Now, I thought that we would start out with your own film and television career. And I have to sit there and say that I was never more excited than when I saw the movie Hair, and you're singing with Laurie Beachman, a Broadway legend at the time, singing Black Boys.
Yes.
What was that like working with Miles Forman?
I tell you, I always say that was one of the highlights of my life and times. We were, in Central Park, and it was a beautiful day in this band shell, wearing cool clothes, having hair out to here, and with Milos. But the Twyla Tharp thing was the coolest element of it, because she choreographed it, and we and these gorgeous black guys playing basketball around us. It was just thrilling. It really was, boy, that you started with that moment is invigorating.
Well, that's a thing to say, that I remember when I saw Hair, and I'm a big fan of yours due to, I liked your solo work and stuff like that. And then I remember, it's like I'm watching Hair and I'm really enjoying it, because there's a lot of, if you're familiar with like Broadway and all these Broadway actors and stuff, like there's always something to see. There's always someone popping up, like Annie Golden or Melba Moore and Laurie Beachman, right, of course.
And then Tree Williams and John Savage. All Broadway people, yeah.
And then, like, you'll be watching, and all of a sudden, Nell Carter comes on. You're like, where did she come from? Or Charlotte Ray. And then I remember, like, watching, and all of a sudden, like, you came on. I was like, oh, my God.
I know. It was amazing, wasn't it? I need to watch it again. I just thought it was such a great, how they opened up the play to make it a real story. And the ending of it was just heartbreaking. I thought it was fantastic. I was really proud to be a part of that.
I mean, it's quite interesting, because in 1977 you got to play Sheila in at the Biltmore Theater on Broadway in the cast of Hair. So
right, and it was pretty much happening simultaneously. The movie was happening the same time as we were doing the revival of Hair.
And I went nearly crazy, and I went clearly crazy, because I really crave her.
Chocolate-flavored treats.
Now, I think a lot of people don't know this, but you were the original The Witch in Into the Woods before Bernadette Peters took over. What was that like working with Stephen Sondheim? Because you were actually doing the, what's it called? We're doing the Playhouse. So you basically, as he's putting the whole show together, you're involved in that whole side.
Yes, we were out at La Jolla. No, not La Jolla. Anyway, in San Diego. It was amazing. I mean, I got to stand there and work on the song with Stephen Sondheim. And I tell you, man, that was a part I could have done forever and ever, because you really got to just chew the scenery in that. And the song Children Will Listen, which is a song I went on to do a lot afterwards. I mean, just one of those just heart-wrenching songs, especially after I had kids, which I did, you know, practically right after I did the Into the Woods. So that was still fresh and I would sing the song. But, you know, it was a blast. But, and what a part. Well, somebody said one of the producers said, you know, you're like a female Mick Jagger. I said, well, that's what I wanted to be my whole life. So thank you for that.
Yeah, they said Sondheim said you were his favorite witch and he called you his Alpha and Omega.
Yes, he did. Yeah, boy. Because that he wrote that in my, you know, when the show closed. Unfortunately, you know, I did it in San Diego. Then I came back and it was the end of the run. So I didn't get to do it that long. And so I did it the beginning and the end. So they gave us scores on the closing night. And he said, you're my Alpha and my Omega. I mean, how amazing is that, right?
Right.
Well, you also got the rap as well. I mean, beans, yes. And nothing but beans.
Yes. Oh, my God. You know, sometimes I try to remember that and I don't. I need to go back. But, I mean, to think that in my life, I you know, had Stephen Sondheim and Jim Steinman, these two geniuses in two different genres, as it were. It's pretty cool. I did, Hair, Me and My Girl.
So it shows you what kind of show.
And Into the Woods, yeah.
Yeah, so you did, I mean, so it tells you what kind of a range you have.
Quite a bit. For, you have a huge range, diverse. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things. It's like, so I hopped around you're so singing. Much. How was I defined?
Well, you also did, I mean, your first recording was that with Jim Steinman and Meatloaf in Paradise by Dashboard Light. Was that your first recording?
First time I was
ever. And how did that come about?
I was in a tour of the National Lampoon show with them.
How'd you like that? The National Lampoon show.
Oh, it was crazy. You know, it was very, you know, satirical and irreverent and
okay.
You know, in one sketch, I played a blind girl who was like Mary Tyler Moore, and she was so cheerful and happy all the time. You know, she threw up her hat, and she was blind because she couldn't catch it. And Meatloaf was my boyfriend, but he would come in and pretend to be my dog and hump my leg, you know, stuff like that. And so, you know, on the road doing that, and Steinman actually came on the road to be with me because he was writing the songs. So, you know, there I was at the right place in the right time. Steinman loved my voice and I was able to be involved with it and with the Paradise song mainly.
I read that you said that Stop Right There were the three words that changed your life because you were traveling around in a blue van driving around the country.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yes. I said that, you know, when Jim died, I wrote a little eulogy saying that, you know, Stop Right There did change my life. You know, it really, you know, gave me a jump start on my recording career. It became this, you know, worldwide sensation. I mean, you know, it's just very a lucky coming together with somebody.
Absolutely. It's so hard to get into rock and roll.
I mean,
exactly. And I got into it kind of immediately. It was amazing.
Well deserved.
I mean, I find that Jim Steinman, you know, when you do follow, you know, his career and you follow, you know, the way that, you know, when he's recording his own music with various artists and stuff like this, there is kind of a family atmosphere. He tends to use the same people over and over. Yeah. I know that you went on to do Pandora's Box with him, which was an album that should have done better, but I think it was something that I don't think the record studios or the record companies knew what to do with it.
Right.
Because I don't know why.
I don't know why exactly. Different artists, all, you know, women, fantastic singers. You know, I don't really know the history of what happened to it. I think there are places in the world where people paid attention to it, but yeah, you know, and it had the great Steinman songs. He probably, I don't know, used those, recycled them, you know, gave them to Celine Dion or something and made $1 million off it, you know, for all I know.
Yeah, I mean, you got to do My Little Red Book, which is a Burt Bacharach number done to the Jim Steinman production.
Right.
And of course, the Doors song as well. What was that called? Sorry, my brain just died.
Yeah, But the best thing I got to do the one ad, which
that's what I was.
Yeah, which was in this Neverland play, where I got to sing Heaven Can Wait. It was in 19, and the one ad is just killer. So to have that down, I mean, a record is cool.
I have to say with the want ad, I have a lot of actress friends, and they go, "Oh, I'm looking for an audition." I go, "Do the want ad." Every time they've done the want ad, they end up getting like callbacks, or you know, almost, you know, most of them do get the job as well. So,
oh, you know, I never thought of doing it.
But it, I mean, I, you know, I also have to sit there and say that it's quite hard to show emotion and stuff like this on a recording, but with the want ad, you do a fantastic voice because you can feel the empathy and the anger and the you know, the destitute and the frustration and the everything,
yeah,
and
regrets,
you're able to do
everything.
All that.
The emotion is so condensed into all of it. I mean, just all the lyrics.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's a relatively short piece, and you go, you know, from one place, you know, to all this anger, and, you know, you'll be able to spew all these horrific things that happen. And then it ends with a joke, you know, kind of has everything. It has something for everybody, right?
Absolutely.
I got to go. When I get off the phone, I'm going to put Pandora's Box on Spotify, and I'm going to listen to it because, you know, I'm one of those people, I'm a terrible archivist for my own stuff. You know, you don't go back and really listen to it, you know, but so that I would like to hear. I'm going to do that.
This is addressed to all the people who answered or may be thinking of answering the personal ad I placed in volume 2, number 15 of this newspaper 2 weeks ago Friday. First, my apologies to the huge bartender with the voice and the light-hearted, dark-skinned advertising man. If either of you had called me back, I might not be writing this retraction of my ad, even though I will soon be too busy to date much. But why didn't you call back? But to the others, which include the two terrifying sisters, the under-18s and the over-60s, the numerous ones who dialed my number and hung up as soon as I said hello, the 35 or 40 of you who made dates with me and never showed up, including the one who complained his body was so powerful he couldn't control it.
It's a great album. You did appear in one of the music videos briefly, where the good girls go to heaven, but the bad girls go everywhere.
Yeah,
which is kind of bizarre because I had Holly Sherwood, because that's one of his. Jim Steinman always brought Holly Sherwood in once in a while.
I don't even know Holly, but as I was looking at some articles and things recently about Jim, she's all over the place. But was she mainly a studio singer that sang backup, or then he had her do demos, or I don't even.
We had to do like Streets of Fire. She's the voice of Diane Lane in the Jim Steinman songs.
Oh.
She's the high voice in the Bonnie Tyler Fast and Speed of Night, the girl who has the high singing. But I mean, from what I can find out about her, she started out her career as a young girl with Ethel Merman in Annie Get Your Gun on Broadway. That's what she's
no
from.
Kidding.
Oh my god.
So yeah, but she's a hard one to track down, that one. So but now, did you, when they were recording Pandora's Box, did they like bring you in and you just did your part, and then did you meet anyone else or?
Well, I knew some, one of the women I was in a show with, Laura. She had like a Janis Joplin voice. We were in the show Beehive off Broadway, and I knew Elaine, and it was kind of a fun clubby thing, but nobody really did, you know, sang together because they were all individual parts. And of course, Todd was there when I, you know, he was producing. So it's great to see him again. And Jim, you know, I would say that was the last real time I spent any real time with Jim, you know, well, because, yeah.
Well, I mean, the last Jim Steinman song that you actually recorded was actually with Carla DeVito in the last Meatloaf album, wasn't it? Braver. But Jim Steinman wasn't involved in the
production. No, he wasn't. But, you know, you're right. It was his song. So he was there. He's always there. I mean, because of like the permanence of that song in the, you know, in the consciousness, you know, Jim is always there in my life, you know, no matter how long it was and that I didn't see him. And yeah.
I read somewhere that you said that he was born fully formed.
Yeah, I do think so. He didn't come out and write, you know, nice songs or then grow into this, you know, knowing how to do this monstrous thing. He in college, you know, all these songs were just there, and you know, he had to been like a wild guy who was nothing like anybody else, I'm sure, growing up, because you don't just turn out like that. So yeah, I you know, he had a lot of strong influences, but he took those influences and just formed Jim Steinman.
I heard that he liked to feed everybody too. He was into food.
Yes, very into food. He took me to twice with a group of people to Lutece, which isn't there anymore. This guy Andre Solter, like the most important, you know, 4-star Michelin restaurant in New York for a long time. And, you know, and of course there was always a lot of food in the studio, but it wasn't just like ordering from the coffee shop down the street. He would have restaurants like Lutece and all these amazing places delivered to him in the studio. Amazing. He spent a lot of money, so these people were not unhappy to serve him.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting about Jim Steinman that I find very interesting, the reason why I've always been a fan of his, is that like Stephen Sondheim, he's able to spin a story with the most fantastic wording and lyricism at the same time by having fantastic musicality going on with it. And it's very rare that you kind of get that. Sometimes you'll get like a great lyricist. Sometimes you'll get a great person who can write songs. But it's very rare that you're able to blend those two to something that was something as unique as Stephen's
right,
or Jim Steinman. So
you know, and you know, there was basically no collaboration with either of those guys, and so it was about the personality, one person who was that art. Yeah,
and every song is a mini opera, really. I mean, it starts off the character being this way. It goes from point A and goes through, and then by the end of it, you have the end of the story, and you've gone on a journey with every song. I mean, some songs, basically, you know, you do have 10 minutes to get on with that story, but you do have that story. But it's like teenage angst, but there's always a cautionary tale. Like, I mean, Paradise by Dashboard Light, I know that people look at it, you know, it's this. But for me, it's a cautionary tale, because the simple thing is like, you know, be careful what you wish for, because if you get it, you might not, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have happiness by the end of it.
Lots of regret in that song.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm stuck with you till the end of time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It, well, I mean, that's what happened to a lot. And that's what happened to a lot of parents. A lot of our parents is like, well, I mean, I'm the reason why my parents got married, because there was a paradise. You know, that they basically went to an Elvis Presley double feature, the drive-in, and I came along 9 months later. So.
Really? Oh, that's a great. You know,
that's funny. You didn't tell me that before.
That probably informs your love of rock and roll. You know.
There you go. That's right.
Well, I was born on his birthday, and luckily, my mom. I was. A hard birth, and luckily she's so much on drugs that she didn't realize what day I was born. So if she realized, my name would have been Elvis. So I kind of I skated past that one. So I'm lucky.
You dodged that bullet, right?
Yeah. I dodged that one.
I would have loved that though.
Now Jim Steinman produced an album with Ian Hunter, All the Good Ones Talking. But then Ian Hunter actually produced your first album, Night Out. So wasn't it called
All the Good Ones Are Taken?
All the Good Ones Are Taken, sorry.
Yes, right, yes. And yes, Ian Hunter produced with Mick Ronson my first album. Yeah.
What was it like putting your first album together?
Well, you know, I took a long time finding songs, you know, on my own. And then I was able, you know, to take the time, you know, Steve Popovich, the guy whose record company it was, Cleveland International, you know, managed me, you know, put me in the studio with this band called The Boys from Illinois. We went out to Illinois and did some stuff, and then, you know, had the luxury of time with Ian and Mick, went and kind of tried it out, and, you know, found that there was a good... synergy there. So yeah, I mean, a lot of the songs were ones that I found and picked out through doing a lot of research, you know, for at least I would say a year or so, and before I was in the studio or doing anything. And then I wrote this song, you know, the song that was actually the biggest song, it was a hit, you know, and a few countries in Europe, We Belong to the Night. I wrote with a guy named Fred Goodman. You know, so that song was there.
Such a beautiful song.
It is, you know, and that was a sort of a continuation of the style, the Phil Spector kind of big sound, you know, that Steinman did, you know.
Then you got to work with The Clash on, you know, one of The Clash's biggest albums, actually, that kind of sent them over the top.
Yeah.
But then you actually got to work with Joe Strummer on The Spirit of St. Louis, which is a really interesting album. I really like that. It's kind of very artistic, and it doesn't fit its time period. It's kind of a timeless album for me, I noticed.
Yeah. Well, that was the problem, that it didn't fit the... It was Joe Strummer and Mick Jones. They wrote most of the songs, but you know, it was sort of a neo cabaret kind of record. You know, it wasn't a rock and roll record, and I had just come out with one record before that, and all of a sudden it was like clunk into a whole different genre. So, you know, people didn't quite get on board with it. You know, but. Mm. It was interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I have to say that I actually really like that album because, you know, I have a lot of your songs on a playlist with other people sort of stuff. And I have to sit there and say, when those songs come on, it's kind of like, I mean, I'm a fan of Joe Strummer, and I mean, one of my favorite songs is "Love Kills" from the Sid and Nancy soundtrack that he did. Mm-hmm. But when I do hear "Spirit of St." You know, the Spirit of St. Louis, I have to sit there and say that it's like, it's so different from that what they've done before. I have to sit there and say it. And I think that I think it's one of those things that, you know, that something that people should probably rediscover, because it does have that, you know, that feeling and the pathos and the empathy that is involved in all the songs, and they do everything takes you on a journey. That's what I quite like.
Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, if people start paying attention to this new album, you know, the catalog will get some attention. That would be fun.
And then your third album, of course, was Another Breath in 1983. And you got to actually work with Ellie Greenwich in that one.
Yeah. You know, I spent a lot of time at Ellie Greenwich's apartment, also ordering food on a regular basis. And with her writing partner, a guy named Jeff Kent. And, you know, we came up... I think it's the first track on that album, Boys in the Attic. And that's a very typical kind of Ellie Greenwich thing. And that was so much fun. I love that. And then the song Keep It Confidential, which is on my album, but that Nona Hendrix also recorded.
Oh, awesome.
I wrote that. I wrote that with the two of them.
I have to say, Ellie Greenwich, I mean, what was it like working with her? Because, I mean, she is basically an icon, 1960 girl group icon.
Yes, she is. She was wonderful, you know. She was, she kind of liked to stay in her home, you know. She was at a point where, you know, she wasn't going anywhere. You came to her, which was fine. And she was... of great humor, but very totally professional, you know, was really knew how to craft a song, but very kind, you know. I mean, I was pretty young, you know, so she was very maternal. You felt very, very comfortable and safe around Ellie.
A couple of years later, she would tell her life story on Broadway. And we actually interviewed Dinah Manoff, who did Leader of the Pack.
Yeah. I know.
And they did what Keep It Confidential, she put into that musical as well. Which, yeah. We had Darlene Love singing it this time around, so.
I know. Yeah, so yeah, that song had a life, which is nice.
Ooh.
But you also got to work with Desmond Child, who actually would actually do a lot of work with some of Jim Steinman's, you know, Bonnie Tyler, the Bonnie Tyler albums, of course, the second album. Desmond Child wrote a couple songs for that album. What was he like working? Because he's like a singer-songwriter, but he also had his group at the same time, around the same time. Was it Desmond Child and Rouge, was it?
And Rouge, time? Which, you know, that was, you know, before all this. They were, you know, they were like a cabaret act. They would play down at Reno Sweeney, which was like the place. Anyway, they were around the whole cabaret scene. And, you know, I knew Desmond that way. And then, my God, he went off to wherever it is. He went off to Hollywood and just blew up, you know, had all those big hits. Didn't he sing La Vida Loca? I mean, write La Vida Loca?
Yeah, he wrote that. Yeah. And he also, I mean, he's had a huge career and he's written some of the big,
and he was,
big,
you know,
big songs.
He was a great guy. You know, we spent a short period of time together. And then he brought me in to do some vocals on. Remember, he did with James Brown, "Living in America."
Yeah,
living in America. So I went in the studio and did some work with him on that, and he just had hilarious stories about James Brown, about them having to hold up cue cards, you know, for him. And yet, as you can imagine, James Brown didn't stand still, so having to run after him with cue cards. And sort of the extremity of his personality. So he was great.
That's excellent.
And then you did an album called About Time in 2013. What was your experiences on the release of that and putting that album together?
Well, it was with Paul Foglino, who wrote the songs on this new album. And he and I, you know, had met doing a show. Actually, he wrote the music for a show down at La Mama in New York called Hercules in High Suburbia. We got to know each other there. We decided to put a band together. He wrote all these songs. We played in clubs for a couple of years doing the material. And then we recorded it. And, you know, it we did, like, right now, I think you were probably in touch with Randy Haker, who is my publicist. Mm-hmm. And I mean, who just does an amazing job. Usually have to run after people, but he runs after us and saying, listen, you got to do this and this and this. And so it's a totally different experience. I didn't have any. I hired somebody who did nothing and wasn't very nice on top of it. And so there was no support, and Paul and I didn't know what to do. And, you know, when there's no record company, you know, your first experience with that. So, but then I started going over to Belgium and working a lot. So I sang a lot of that material and got some, you know, some exposure over there. And so it was fine, but the experience of that, and I think what happened to it is not as positive as what we're seeing right now with this new album, which I think is great, and people seem to love it.
What I need to do is I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, but just so our listeners know that you were actually the guiding vocal on "Total Eclipse of the Heart" for Bonnie Tyler.
Yeah. Please, amazing. You don't have to remind me of that. You know, it's that, like, Steinman was going to produce a record for me, and then it didn't happen. You know, so that would have been on my album, but you know, it's another one of those things you can't dwell on, because so what, you know, everything you do in your life or don't do just takes you where you are at this moment. Exactly. I have a good life. To wipe the tears from your eyes, nobody ever died from crying. Nobody ever died from crying. You can't go on. You're almost gone. You're lonely. You're dying. Nobody ever died from crying.
I mean, it's quite I think it's quite fantastic that Carla DeVito's on that song with you, considering that she actually had to mime to you during the video of Paradise by Last.
I know. You know what? I never knew that until I started, me and Keith were talking about the interview. I never knew that she was lip syncing here, but I've never known that. And in the entire years, I know the whole album by heart. I love it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I never knew that. Never knew that.
Okay. Well, it's cool.
I just was like, wow, you know, and talk about learning something new every day.
And yes, so you thought that was her singing. So you know, through the years, I was kind of like, grr, Carla DeVito, you know.
Well, I knew that you were the original artist, but I just like, God, you know, she does it well too, you know. it's just like, what do you say? I mean, that was just a real moment. It's like, wow, they right. did that. I was. Did you not want to go on the road with Meatloaf? Or
no, I didn't. I mean, you know, at that time, I was, you know, that was like around the time the Hair movie was made, and I was doing.
So you're already busy.
I was on Broadway, and then you know, I had the opportunity to get a record deal and all that. So. Yeah, I did. I was doing stuff on my own, so I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to go.
There. Wonderful voice, though. I'm just, it's the range, and it's just amazing. All the things you've had such a diverse career, and you've had a wonderful career, and you're still continuing to do so, which makes fans happy. So
thank you. Yeah, I hope so.
Well, I have to sit there and say that it is quite funny because, of course, you had the first video, Paradise by Dashboard Light. Then you have the second video that they did because I think it was part of a movie with Steve Martin in it. And they got someone else miming to your voice again. And it's like, I was like,
on Paradise?
Yeah, Paradise.
Yeah. In that movie? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so they did, you know, one of those movie tie-ins. Singing, so Meatloaf comes back and he's dressed up in his Rocky Horror gear and a couple of the characters. And then have some blonde woman doing the miming to your voice again.
So, God. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, the good thing about doing your own music is that, you know, when you do your own music like you're doing now, I mean, it's going to be, you know, at least you have control over who's miming
your voice.
Yes.
Artistic license.
I'm gonna find a gorgeous 16-year-old and have her do it and tell everybody it's me.
Right.
Well,
that'll be good.
Didn't the Weather Girls do that with Ride on Time by Black Box? I'm gonna ride on time. And it's actually one of the Weather Girls who's doing the vocal, and they had like this skinny black model.
Okay. I love those Weather Girls. It's raining men. And they did that themselves, which it was so great seeing those girls up there.
Well, Millie Vanilli had a whole career of it, so singing for them.
That got sort of nipped in the bud. That was a sad story. That guy killed himself.
I know.
One of those guys.
And he won a Grammy.
I know. Go figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the new album is also it's quite interesting that the way you were that you put it together. Considering that how you've traditionally put albums together in the past, and now you have this that you actually were able to record it in your own home and have it put together this way, what was that experience like? Did you like that experience having been being in a recording studio, or?
I did. You know, I'm at the point where if I don't have to leave my house, I'm perfectly happy. You know,
yeah. Everything that's gone on the last year, I don't blame you.
Right. You know, and. I
don't care about the bridges that you burned. I don't care how many steps you covered in recovery. That don't matter to me. I know that you're no good. I could see you if I could.
I sit there saying, I'm at that age now. When I look at people, I just kind of shake my head and no.
I know, yeah.
Well, my grandmother always says that ignorance is bliss. There's a lot of happy people in the world. So, What can you tell us when the album's going to be released?
August 6th. We had the I'm Just Happy to Be Here single, and then another single is coming out in July. I want to say July 7th, called Are You Good Enough? And then the whole album will be coming out in August. Are you guys in London?
I'm in Dallas.
I'm in London.
Oh, you're in London. Okay. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. No, I'm in London. You actually have a good following here in London, actually.
If I could get somebody to book me, I would love to play over there. You know, because I'm supposed to do these gigs in Holland. I have this great band, this Belgian band, and, you know, around this record, to be able to come over there would be cool. Mm-hmm. I want to try to dig up somebody to get me booked over there, you know?
Oh, yeah. Because they keep canceling my tickets. I was going to go over there with my daughter and visit, and they canceled my tickets again.
Yeah, I know. My gigs have been canceled 3 times now. Believe me, I know.
Well, you actually were speaking to E.G. Daly a couple of weeks ago, the actress who's a singer and songwriter and so on and so forth, or Elizabeth Daly, depending on what you know her from. But she was sitting there saying that what she's been doing now is she's actually got to the point where she actually had, like, direct her own videos and everything to promote her music and sort of thing. And she's finding that she's giving herself a YouTube presence is actually helping with any new music that she's putting
out.
Yeah,
it does.
It's helping with the marketing.
Yeah, and Spotify, you know, we're doing the Spotify thing. And I think maybe there's, you know, audio YouTube, but I don't know.
Well, we're on audio.
We're on
YouTube on YouTube.
Right. So. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You're on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're on so many platforms. I don't know what we're on at the moment. So.
One thing I can't let you go without before I forget. I loved you on Night Court. I absolutely loved you and John Larroquette getting after each other. It was hysterical. I laughed. My father and mother still remember you. They loved that show.
Well, that's great. That's great.
You were just excellent on there, and just like I liked Marky Post, but I liked you better.
Thank you. I'll take that. Okay, you guys, for some reason I'm running out of battery here. This is weird.
That's okay.
No, that's no problem. So what we'll do is want to thank you for joining the Literary License podcast. Thank you for sharing your new album with us, and thank you for sharing your memories and your work with us.
Thank you so much for taking the time for us. Really,
thank you for having me.
And we'll be listening to that new album when it's out on the 6th of August. And
okay.
We'll share your links as well.
Please, please do.
You have a good one.
Heaven can wait. And a band of angels wrapped up in my heart will take me through the lonely night, through the cold of the day, and I know heaven can wait, and all the gods come down here just to sing for me, and the melody's gonna make me fly. Without pain, without fear, give me all of your dreams and let me go along on your way. Give me all of your prayers to sing and I'll turn the night into the sky.
Heaven can wait, and a band of angels wrapped up in my heart will take me through the lonely night, through the cold of the day, and
like a child again. Heaven can